were so many other children. Surely they are all gone now.
No. Taking more would have attracted attention, and you might not have made it as far as you did.
But why didn't you just take the baby and go home? She asks. Surely your family would have understood what you had done and helped you.
I want to tell her the rest of the story, and explain why my parents had been so outraged. But the words stick in my throat. What I said about my father being awful before was true. I manage, resorting to that part of the lie once more. That was why I had left, why I was at the train station in the first place.
And your mother?
She is not very brave. Another part truth. Also, I didn't want to cause them trouble, I add. Astrid eyes me evenly, and I wait for her to point out that I had brought my troubles instead to her and the rest of the circus. I had told her about Theo in hopes that she might be more willing to accept me. But what if the opposite is true? Outside the practice hall, there is a sudden clattering, a car of some sort screeching to a halt, followed by unfamiliar male voices. I turn to Astrid. What on earth? But she has turned and raced through the rear door of the dressing room, the one that leads outside. Before I can call after her, the front door to the dressing room flies open, and two uniformed men barrel in from the practice hall, followed by Peter.
Officers, I assure you.
I freeze. My legs stone. The first I have seen since coming to Darmstadt, they are not Schutzpolizei as I had seen at the station, but actual Nazi SS. Have they come for me? I had hoped that my disappearance with Theo would have been long forgotten, but it is hard to see what other business they might have with the circus.
Fräulein?
One of the men, older and graying at the temples beneath his hat, steps closer. Let them just take me, I pray. Theo is thankfully not here, but well across the winter quarters. If they should see him, though. Terrified, I look over my shoulder for Astrid. She will know what to do. I start to go after her, but behind the men, Peter's eyes flare. He is trying to signal some sort of a caution to me. As the officer nears, I brace myself for arrest. But he simply stands too close, leering down the low-cut front of my leotard.
We have received a report, the second officer says.
Younger by a good 10 years, he stands back, looking uncomfortable in the close quarters of the dressing room.
Of a Jew with the circus, he adds.
Terror shoots through me like a knife to the stomach. So they know about Theo after all. The men begin to search the dressing room, opening the armoire and peering under the tables. Do they really think we've hidden the child there? I prepare myself for the questions that will surely come next. But the officers storm back out to the practice hall. I lean against the dressing room table in a cold sweat and shaking. I have to get to Theo before they do and run. I start for the door. There is a sudden scraping sound beneath my feet. Looking down, I glimpse Astrid. She has somehow gotten below the floorboards into the crawl space. What is she doing down there? I kneel down, assaulted by the smell of sewage and manure. Astrid, I...
Shh!
She is curled up into a tight ball, hiding. What are you doing? I stop mid-sentence as the older officer walks in again. I straighten, smoothing my skirt and stepping on the crack through which I'd seen Astrid. Excuse me, I cry, feigning modesty. This is the women's dressing room and I need to change. But the officer continues to stare at the floorboards.
Had he seen her? He lifts his head, eyeing me.
Papers?
I falter. I'd fled the train station hastily the night I found Theo, leaving my identity card behind. Herr Neuhoff would get me papers, Estrid had promised, before we went on the road, assuming I managed the act. I do not have them yet, though. I have to go get them. I bluff without thinking. Peter's look is approving. Yes, draw them away from here. Stall for time. I start for the door from the dressing room into the practice hall.
Follow her,
he instructs the younger officer, who lingers just outside the doorway. My panic worsens. If the men follow me, they will see Theo and ask questions. Really, that isn't necessary. It will just take a minute.
Fine, the older man says. But before you go, I have a few questions.
I freeze, skin prickling. He takes a cigarette from his pocket and lights it.
The woman on the trapeze.
I was on the trapeze, I manage, hoping no one heard the quaver in my voice.
Not you. A woman with dark hair.
They must have seen Estrid through the gym window.
Where is she?
Before I can answer, Herr Neuhoff rushes in.
Gentlemen,
he says, as though greeting old friends. This must not be the first time they have come.
Heil Hitler!
His salute is so authentic that I cringe. But the officer does not smile.
Hallo, Fritz.
He addresses Herr Neuhoff too familiarly, his voice lacking any sign of respect.
We are looking for a performer who is reportedly a Jew.
Do you have anyone like that here?
No, of course not,
Herr Neuhoff blusters, seeming to almost take offense at the suggestion.
The Circus Neuhoff is German. Jews have been banned from performing. So you are saying that there are no Jews with the circus?
I know they're good at trickery.
I am a German, Herr Neuhoff replies, as if that answers everything. The circus is Judenrein,
cleansed of Jews.
You know that, gentlemen.
I don't recall her, the officer says, pointing his head in my direction. The ground seems to shift beneath me. Does he think I am a Jew?
So many new performers each year,
Herr Neuhoff says airily. I hold my breath, waiting for the man to ask further.
Noah joined us this year from the Netherlands. Isn't she wonderfully Aryan? The Fuhrer's own ideal.
I admire the skilled way Herr Neuhoff makes the argument, but hate that he has to do so.
Mein Herren, you've come so far. Join me up at the villa for some cognac. We'll finish our inspection first, the officer says, undeterred.
He flings open the armoire a second time, peers inside. Then he halts, standing just above the spot where Estrid is hiding. I hold my breath, dig my fingernails into my palms. If he looks down, he will surely see her.
Come, come, Herr Neuhoff soothes. There's nothing more here to search. Just a quick drink, and then you'll want to be on the road to get back to the city before nightfall.
The officers storm from the dressing room, Herr Neuhoff and Peter in tow. When they are gone, I sink down into a chair, shaking. Estrid remains silent below the floorboards, still not daring to come out. Peter returns a few minutes later.
They've gone.
I follow him out the back of the dressing room. Along the edge of the practice hall, hidden behind a wheelbarrow, is the narrowest of cellar doors. He pries it open and helps Estrid from her hiding place. She She is pale and covered in bits of hay and manure.
Are you all right?
I see then the way he holds her, a moment's tenderness. I should leave them alone. But she turns away from him. Her pride is too hurt to let him close. I follow them back into the practice hall. I find a cloth and wet it in one of the buckets.
Thank you, Astrid says, as I hand her the cloth.
It is the kindest voice I've heard her use. Her hands tremble as she wipes the brown muck from her hair and neck. I struggle to find the words to ask my many questions.
Astrid, you hid
a trick from the great Baldini. He performed with my family years ago in Italy.
She smiles.
Don't ask me how I did it. A good magician never reveals her secrets.
But I am in no mood for jokes.
Oh, Astrid!
I burst into tears. Though she hates me, I cannot help but care.
They almost found you.
They didn't, though.
She replies, a note of satisfaction in her voice.
But why did they want you?
I persist, even though I know my questions are too much for her right now.
Why did you hide?
Darling,
Peter interjects with a note of caution.
I can trust her, Astrid says.
I straighten with pride. She will find out soon enough anyway. But she bites her lip and studies me, as if still deciding whether to confide in me.
You see, Theo is not the only Jew with the circus. I am also a Jew.
I am stunned into silence. I had not imagined that Astrid could be Jewish, though with her dark hair and eyes, it made sense. I exhale, thanking God in that moment that I had not told her everything about my past and the German soldier. Something had held me back, and it is for the best, because surely if I had, she would have thrown me out.
I was the youngest of 5 children in our family circus, she adds. Our winter quarters were adjacent to Herr Neuhoff's.
I remember the dark, abandoned house over the hill that Astrid had eyed as we traveled back and forth between the women's lodge and practice hall.
I'd left it to marry Eric and live in Berlin.
I glance at Peter out of the corner of my eye, wondering if it is hard for him to hear about the men Astrid loved before.
He was a senior officer at Reich headquarters.
A Jew, married to a high-ranking Nazi. I try to imagine what that life had been like for her. I've been training alongside Astrid for weeks, feeling as though I had come to know her. But now a whole different person seems to appear before my eyes. She continues.
When I came back to Darmstadt, my family had disappeared. Herr Neuhoff took me in. Ingrid is my birth name. We changed it so no one would know.
It's hard to imagine anyone rejecting her. An image of my father standing at the door to my bedroom ordering me to leave appears in my mind. All of the old pain that I have worked so hard to push aside these many months wells up, as fresh and awful as the day it happened.
What about your family?
I ask, fearing the answer.
Gone.
Her eyes are hollow and sad.
You don't know that,
Peter says gently, placing his arm around her. This time she does not turn away, but rests her head on his shoulder for comfort.
It was winter when I came back, and they should have been here,
Astrid says numbly. She shakes her head.
They would not have been able to go far enough to outrun the Germans.
No,
it is only me.
I still see their faces, though. She lifts her chin.
Don't pity me, she says. How could I possibly? She is so strong and beautiful and brave.
Does this happen often?
I gesture in the direction in which the police had gone. More than enough. It's fine, really. There have been inspections from time to time. Sometimes the police come through to make sure we are in compliance with code. Mostly it has just been a shakedown, and Herr Neuhoff gives them a few marks to be on their way.
Peter shakes his head grimly.
This was different. SS and... They were looking for you.
Her face grows somber. Yes.
We have to go,
Peter says, his face stony. Though I have seen him rehearse, it is impossible to imagine the dark, brooding man bringing levity to a crowd.
Leave Germany.
His words come in staccato bursts, breath urgent. He is thinking of Astrid. She needs to be out of the country immediately, just as surely as I must get Theo to safety. A few more weeks, she says, soothing him. Then we'll be in France, I offer.
You think France is so much better? Peter demands.
It won't be, really, Astrid explains, answering for me. Once we might have found some safety in the Zone Lieve, but no more. In the early years of the war, Vichy had not technically been occupied, but the Germans had all but done away with the puppet regime 2 years ago, taking control of the rest of the country.
I need to go speak with Herr Neuhoff, Peter says. Astrid, you'll be all right?
Though he speaks to Astrid, he looks at me, as if asking me to care for her. I hesitate. I am desperate to go check on Theo and make sure the Germans had not seen him. But I cannot leave Astrid alone. Come, I urge, reaching out my hand. I've got some questions about what we practiced today, and a sore ankle that needs taping. I make it sound as though I need her help instead. Here, I say, taking the now soiled cloth from her once Peter has gone. I return the cloth to the bucket where I had found it, kneeling to rinse it and wring it out. When I straighten, Astrid is staring out the window across the valley. I wonder if she is thinking of the SS coming, or her family, or both. Are you all right? I ask.
I'm sorry, she replies. What I did to you was wrong.
It takes a moment before I realize she is talking about the trapeze earlier, pushing me. With all that has happened, I had nearly forgotten. I understand now. You didn't want me to be afraid. She shakes her head.
Only a fool is not afraid. We need fear to keep our edge. I wanted you to know the worst that would happen, so you could be prepared and make sure it does not.
My father did the same thing to me when I was 4. I tried to grasp the idea of someone pushing a toddler off a platform 40 feet in the air. Anywhere else it would be a crime, but here it was training, accepted. Do you have a trunk? Astrid asks, changing subjects. I shake my head. I had left Bensheim with nothing, and have only the bits of clothing she had gathered for Theo and me.
Well, we'll have to get you one. That is, if you'll stay.
There is fear in her eyes, and a kind of vulnerability that had not been there before, or perhaps I had not seen it.
We can't perform on the flying trapeze without a third aerialist. and I must perform.
With the Germans having come, the table seemed to have turned, and she is begging me now, needing me for the act in a way I might not have imagined possible. I hesitate, considering my response. Later that night, I lie awake. Astrid, who had not gone to Peter for the first night since my arrival, snores beside me. I think about all that she's been through. We had both been cast out by people we loved, me by my parents, her by her husband. And we both lost our families. Perhaps we are not so very different after all. But Astrid is a Jew. I shiver, feeling the danger that is so much worse for her than it is for me. In 1,000 years, I would never have imagined it. I reach for her arm, as if checking to make sure she is still here and safe. I suppose I should not have been surprised to learn the truth about her. In wartime, we all have a past, don't we? Even a baby like Theo. Everyone needs to hide the truth and reinvent himself in order to survive. Unable to sleep, I slip out from beneath Theo and climb from bed. I tiptoe past Astrid and out of the lodge, crossing the field in the cold darkness. The ground beneath my feet crackles, crisp with frost. Inside the practice hall, the air is thick with rosin and dry sweat. I look up at the trapeze, but I do not dare to practice alone. Instead, I walk into the dressing room, staring at the spot where Astrid had hidden. What had it been like for her? I slip out the back door of the dressing room, into the cold night air once more. Then walk to the cellar door and pull at it. The latch sticks, and I marvel that Astrid had been able to put herself in the tiny space so quickly. I cannot open it. My heart pounds. Suddenly it is as if I am running for my life from the Germans, about to get caught. The door swings open, and I climb inside. Then I shut the door and lie in the darkness. The space is long and shallow, with enough room for only one person to lie flat. And, perhaps, a child. Could we hide Theo here with Astrid if the police came again? He might cry out. A baby, though smaller, is not as easy to hide. I inhale the air, which is choked with the fetid smell of decay. My mind reels back to earlier, when Astrid had asked me to stay with the circus. I had not answered right away. My burden seemed heavier for knowing her secret, and I could not help but wonder whether Theo and I would be safer on our own. Then I saw it, the pleading look in her eyes, needing help, but not wanting to ask. I'll stay, I promised. I could not abandon her now. Good, she replied, with more relief in her voice than she surely intended. We need you more than ever. The words seemed to stick a bit in her throat. We'll begin again tomorrow. She turned and walked away. Remembering now, I realized she had not thanked me. It does not matter, though. Astrid needs me. And in this moment, lying in her place beneath the ground, I will do anything to save her.
Chapter 7 Astrid. Out of Germany, finally. As the flat-roofed border station recedes in the darkness, my entire body slumps with relief. I lie back down beside Peter on the double-wide berth that takes up most of his quarters on the train. He snores lightly, mumbles something in his sleep. It has been more than a month since the SS officers had come to the training hall in Darmstadt, asking questions about a Jew performing with the circus. We had rehearsed for it, of course, the possibility that I would have to hide, plotting the possible distractions, calculating how many steps it would take me to get to the cellar from various locations, the effort it would require for me to pull up the heavy wood trap door. We'd even had a code word planned. If Herr Neuhoff or Peter or one of the others told me to go fishing, I was to head for the cellar. Go camping meant to flee the fairgrounds entirely. But we had been caught off guard when the SS came, and I'd barely made it out the back door before they stormed into the training hall. It was just as well. There was nothing that could have prepared me for lying motionless underground in that cold, dark space. Suffocated beneath the ground was the furthest thing from the freedom I felt when I flew through the air. It was death. Remembering now, I pressed closer to Peter, soaking in his solidness and warmth. Who had told the police there was a Jew with the circus? I had scarcely gone beyond the winter quarters when we were not on the road, but perhaps a delivery person or other visitor had spied me and caught on? Or had it been one of our own? I eyed the other performers or workers differently after that day, wondering who might not want me around. No one could be trusted. Except Peter, of course. And Noah. She has as much to lose as I do, maybe more. The SS had not come to the winter quarters again in the weeks before we went on the road. But I'd nevertheless been on edge ever since. The days passed slowly before our departure, each with its own threat of detection. The danger became real after that, in a way it hadn't quite been before. Eric appears improbably in my mind. What would the Obergruppenführer think of his wife, hiding from his colleagues beneath the earth like a hunted animal? I see his face more vividly than I had in months, and wonder how he had explained my departure to our friends and neighbors. "Off to visit a sick family member," I could hear him say in the smooth voice I'd once so loved. Or maybe no one asked at all. Had he stayed in the apartment, still smelling my scent, and using the things that once were ours? Or, worse yet, brought another woman there? He might have moved. Eric was not one to linger on the past. Beside me, Peter stirs, and I push away my thoughts of Eric guiltily. As Peter rolls toward me, I feel his need for me through the fabric of our night clothes. His hands reach for me, find the edge of my nightdress. It is often this way in the middle of the night. More than once, I have awoken to find him already inside me, ready and primal. Once I might have minded. Now I am grateful for the bluntness of his desire, which comes without the pretext of romance. I climb astride Peter, naked beneath my nightdress, and press my palms against the warmth of his chest, inhaling the air mixed with liquor and tobacco and sweat. Then I rock slowly and methodically with the rhythm of the train. Peter reaches up and cups my chin, drawing my gaze down to his. Usually he keeps his eyes closed, lost as if in another world. But he is staring deeply at me now in a way he has not before. It is as if he is trying to solve a mystery or unlock some sort of door. The intensity of his eyes releases something in me. I begin to move more quickly, needing more as the heat of our connection deep inside me grows. Peter's hands are on my hips, guiding me. His eyes roll backward. As my passion crests in that silent, practiced way, I collapse forward and bite his shoulder to stifle my cries, so they do not echo through the rail cars. Then I roll onto the berth beside Peter. His fingers are knotted in my hair, and he murmurs softly to himself in Russian. He clings to me tightly, kissing my forehead, cheeks, chin. His passion sated now, his touch is gentle, and his gaze warm. Peter falls into an instant slumber, one arm flung over his head in a gesture replicating surrender, the other heavy across my chest. He sleeps fitfully, though, tossing and fighting a battle beneath eyelids that never quite still. I wonder what he sees. A chapter from a book I have never read. I run my hand soothingly over him until he quiets. We became lovers the previous summer on the road. At first, we would spend evenings sitting by the fire in the backyard behind the big top, long after the others had gone to bed. Only later came the nights together, like this one, finding warmth and company with each other. There is sadness in him, a tragedy about which I do not dare ask. Sometimes it is as if in his feverish moments he is trying to reclaim the past. I have not told him details about my years away from the circus with Eric either. Life with Peter is about the here and now. We are with each other just to be, a relationship based neither on a shared past nor future promises that we might not be able to keep. The part of me that might have wished for more from a man died the day I left Berlin. I stare up at the ceiling beams that rock back and forth with the movement of the train. The previous morning we'd arisen before dawn. The load-in had begun hours earlier, an endless array of boxcars emblazoned with the circus logo, filled with boxes and tent poles. The workers had been up all night, and their cigarette smoke and sweat seemed to encircle the train in great rings. The animals went last, just before us. Blanket-covered elephants urged inch by inch up ramps. Big cat cages painstakingly rolled onto the cars.
"Eee!"
Theo cried as he spied the last of the elephants being shoved in, four workers pushing against its massive backside. I had to smile. To us circus folk, even the children, the exotic beasts had become commonplace. When was the last time anyone here had marveled at an elephant? Peter has a private compartment, half a rail car, cordoned off with a makeshift wall. It is nothing compared with the luxury in which my family had traveled. We'd had two carriages, our own beds, private bath and dining table, almost a miniature house on rails. Of course, that had been the heyday of the circus, the golden era. I touched my right ear reflexively, feeling for the gold earring that had been my mother's, running my fingertip over the small, uneven ruby. There has been no sign of my family since my return to Darmstadt. My hope of hearing word of them when I went on the road with the circus Neuhoff the previous year had failed. I could not ask anyone directly, lest they make the connection between me and my true identity. And when I made casual references in the cities where we had once performed, people just said that the Klempt Circus had not come that year. I'd even sent a letter to Herr Fein, the booking agent in Frankfurt, who had arranged the tour for my family's circus in the larger cities, hoping that perhaps he would know where my family had gone. But it had returned with a scrawl across the front. Unzistelbar. Undeliverable. Shadows race past along the wall of the carriage. We've been on the train for 30 hours, longer than we should have been, but for the detours around where stretches of track have been damaged or destroyed. The train sat motionless for hours somewhere close to the border, while British warplanes roared overhead and bombs fell so close that they shook our bags from the racks. But now we amble easily across the rolling countryside. My eyes start to grow heavy, lulled by the rocking of the train and the warmth of passion Peter and I had just shared. I draw his blanket around me as cold air seeps through the cracked window. It's too cold to be on the road. The rail cars are poorly heated. The cabins at the fairgrounds meant for summer. The program had been set, though. We had started out on the first Thursday in April, as we had the previous year. Once, the circus would have gone where the money was plentiful. The wine-soaked valleys of the Loire and wealthy villages of the Rhone Alps. Now, we perform where we are permitted. A schedule the Germans set. That the Reich has agreed the circus may continue still all these years is no small thing. They trot us through occupied France as if to say, see, life is still normal. How bad can it all be if such fun still exists? But we represent everything Hitler hates. The freaks and oddities in a regime that is all about conformity. They will not permit us to go on forever. The train slows, screeches to a halt. I sit upright, disentangling myself from Peter's arm. Though we had crossed the border into France hours earlier, checkpoints might come at any time. I jump up, fumbling for my Ausweis and other documents. We begin to move again, the slowdown temporary. I sit on the edge of the bed, my heart still pounding. We are close to the line that once divided Vichy from occupied France. Though both are now controlled by the Reich. There will surely still be an inspection of the train. When, not if, the guards come, I want to be one among a dozen girls in the sleeper car, not in Peter's cabin, risking more scrutiny of my identity and papers than if I simply blend in with the others. I climb from the bed, dressing quickly in the icy air. Tiptoeing quietly so as not to wake Peter, I slip into the next car, second-hand and frayed and stale-smelling, where the girls sleep, berths stacked atop each other three high. Despite the cramped quarters, there are real linens, not bedrolls. Beneath the bunks, small steamer trunks are lined up neatly, one for each of us. Noah sleeps on one of the low bunks, clutching the baby to her chest like a stuffed animal. Her face seems even younger in slumber, unlike the night she had come to us. She is Bockfisch, my mother would have said, on the verge of womanhood. Watching her embrace Theo, something tugs inside me. We had both been abandoned, exiled in our own way from the lives we had known. But this is no time for sentimentality. Whether she will be able to perform as we need her to, that is the only thing that matters. As an aerialist, it is not enough to be technically good. It is personality, flair, the ability to make the audience hold its breath, as if fearing for their own lives right along with ours. Similarly, mere appearance and personality would not suffice. Even the most beautiful woman would not survive a season on the circuit without the pure physical grace, agility, and strength to back it up. Noah has surprised me so far. I had thought she would give up after the first day, that she would never fly. I had not counted on her gymnastics training, though, or her tenacity. She has worked hard, and she is smart and capable. And brave. Her rescuing Theo from the Nazi car had more than proved that. She's as good as she can possibly be, though it will all hang on whether she can perform under the lights in front of hundreds of people 2 and 3 times per day. Another girl has taken the berth where I was meant to have slept, so I squeeze into the narrow strip of berth beside Noah. But I cannot sleep. Instead, I rehearse our opening performance that evening, marking the movements in my mind. beside me, Noah stirs and shifts in a slow, practiced way, so as not to wake Theo.
Are we there yet?
Soon, a few more hours.
We lie beside each other, our sides bumping gently as the train sways.
Talk to me,
she says, her voice hollow with loneliness. I hesitate, not sure what she wants to hear.
I was born in a rail car just like this one, I offer.
I feel her surprise through the darkness.
My mother stepped from the stage and had me.
Only my father's protest, the story went, had kept her from returning to the show immediately after.
What was it like growing up in the circus?
With Noah, questions seem to endlessly beget more questions. She is so curious to know and learn it all. I contemplate my answer. I hated circus life when I was younger. I longed for a normal childhood, the permanency of staying in one place and having a real home. To be able to own more things than could fit in a single steamer trunk. Even at our winter quarters during the months when I was allowed to go to school, I was different from the other girls, an outsider and an oddity. When Eric appeared, it was the escape I'd been looking for my whole life. I tried to dress the part, mold my accent so I sounded like the other officers' wives. But long after we settled down in Berlin, something was still missing. The apartment was empty, without the sounds and smells of the winter quarters. I missed the noise and excitement of performing on the road. How could people live in one place all of the time and not get bored? I loved Eric, and after a while, my longing began to fade like a not-quite-healed scar. But I remained haunted by the world I had always wanted to escape. My life with Eric, I see now, had been temporary, like another act in one of our shows. When it ended, I had not shed a tear. Rather, I simply changed costumes and moved on. I did not tell Noah any of this, though. It is not what she wants to hear.
Once, when I was a girl, we performed for a princess, I say instead, in Austria-Hungary. The entire tent was filled with her court.
Really?
Her voice is awe-filled. I nod. Empresses are gone now, replaced by parliaments and votes. Better for the people, perhaps, but somehow less magical. Would the circus fade into history as well? Though no one speaks of it, I sometimes wonder if we are marching toward extinction with each performance, too busy dancing and flying through the air to see it. I open the locket around my neck, revealing in the moonlight a tiny photo of my family, the only one I have.
My mother,
I say. She was a great beauty. At least before Isidore had been killed and she had taken to the bottle. Magnificent, where I am plain. Her features Romanesque.
Once, before I was born, the circus traveled to St. Petersburg, and she performed for Tsar Nicholas. He was enchanted by her, and they say the Tsarina actually wept. I'm only a fraction of what she was in the air.
I can't imagine anyone better,
Noah declares too loudly, and the girl sleeping on the berth above us snorts in her sleep. Theo stirs and threatens to wake. As I pat his back to soothe him, I wonder if Noah is trying to curry favor with me. But the admiration in her voice sounds sincere.
It's true. She was a legend.
The only two women in a family of males. I would have thought my mother and I would have been closer. She loved me completely, but there was a part of her that I could never reach.
You and Eric, Noah asks,
and I bristle at the familiarity with which she uses his name.
You never had children?
I am surprised, then annoyed by the unexpected change of topic. She has a way of finding the weak spot, going for the question I can least bear to answer. I shake my head. I couldn't. I've wondered so often whether Eric would have fought harder to keep me if there had been a baby. But our child would have been Jewish in the eyes of the Reich. Would he have disowned us both? He might have children now, and a new wife. For although I had not signed the divorce papers, the Reich did not acknowledge that our marriage ever existed.
And then, when you returned to the circus, you fell in love with Peter?
Noah asks.
No,
I reply quickly. It isn't like that at all.
Peter and I are together.
Don't make it more than it is. I feel the train begin to slow. I sit up, wondering if it is my imagination. But the wheels screech as the train stops with a groan, another checkpoint. Herr Newhoff procured papers for everyone, even Theo. But they are still not the real thing. And at each stop, I am filled with dread. Will they be good enough? Surely Herr Newhoff had spared no expense in making sure they looked authentic. It would take only one border guard with a sharp eye, though, to notice some detail that was not right. A rock forms on my chest, making it impossible to breathe. There is a knock outside the rail car. The door flings open, and a border guard steps into the carriage, not waiting for a response. He shines a light around the car, holding it longer than is necessary on the bodies of the girls stirring from sleep. He works his way down the berths, checking each identity card in a perfunctory manner, before moving on to the next. I exhale slightly. Perhaps this will be straightforward after all. Then he reaches us.
Kenkart, Ausweis.
I pass him my documents, along with those that Noah hands me. I hold my breath and count, waiting for him to hand them back. One, two. Then he takes them and walks from the train. I bite my lip, so I don't cry out in protest.
What just happened?
Noah asks, her voice panicked and confused. I do not answer. Something. Some detail of one of our identity cards had given us away, belied the fact that they were fakes. Easy, I think, forcing myself to breathe normally so as not to panic Noah. The others are eyeing us nervously now. Noah slips her damp hand into mine, trusting as a child. I brace myself, waiting for the guard to return and drag us from the car.
Your shoes,
I whisper urgently.
What?
Noah tenses, her nails digging into my damp palm.
Push them on, if they should take us.
I stop, not finishing, as she begins to shake. It is essential that we appear calm when the guard returns. But he does not come. 5 minutes pass, then 10. My dread worsening by the second.
Had he gone for the other guards? Oh, how I need Peter here with me.
Noah squeezes my fingers once, then holds fast, not letting go. The train car rocks and starts to move.
Our papers,
Noah whispers, her voice growing louder with urgency.
They're gone.
Shh. We are still on the train. We have not been arrested. But we are continuing on without our papers, which is almost as bad. A moment later, Herr Newhoff appears at the door of the carriage and gestures to me.
Here,
he says when I reach him. In his thick fingers, he holds all of our documents. A strange look crosses his face, and I wonder how much he had to bribe the guard to look the other way and not ask too many questions. As the train picks up speed, there is a collective exhale, the whole carriage seeming to relax at once. Everyone is awake now, and the girls rise and dress, jostling into one another in the cramped, swaying space. Outside, the sky is lightening. Pink, behind the dark silhouette of a terraced vineyard, capped by a crumbling church. Sometime later, one of the kitchen workers appears at the end of the carriage, passing out a breakfast of cold bread and cheese. The countryside begins to thin, farmhouses dotting the fields more frequently. Children peer curiously from the windows of houses and run along the tracks as our brightly painted train cars pass, hoping to catch a glimpse of the animals. We continue on in silence, traveling over an aqueduct, and a valley unfurls, revealing a red-roofed village beneath stone castle ruins, ringed by fields of withered brush. Mossy-roofed cottages dot the hillside. They are punctuated by the occasional chateau or church with a crumbling belfry, alabaster stone walls warmed by the sun now high in the sky. A ripple of excitement runs through the coach. Almost there. "We have to get ready for the parade," I tell Noah. "Parade?" Noah asks, her brow furrowing. I sigh inwardly, reminding myself how much she still does not know. "Yes, after we arrive, we will get off the train and immediately parade through town on carriages. We offer a preview to get the locals excited about the show." I watch her face as she processes this new bit of information, looking for signs of nervousness or fear. But she simply nods, then sets Theo down so she can dress. The girls begin to primp as well as they can in the cramped space, applying rouge and blackening their eyebrows. "Here." I pull a pink sequined dress from my trunk and pass it to Noah. She looks around, still embarrassed to change in front of the others. But there is nowhere to go, so she slips it on, nearly stumbling in her haste. "Will they even come see us?" Noah asks. "The French, I mean? Surely to them, we are still German." "I thought the same thing the first thing after the war began," I reply. "Not to worry. The people still love the show. The circus has no borders." The audiences do not see the show as German, and they come faithfully each year. The train wheels grind to a halt as we near the station. We do not get out right away, but continue preparing as the wagons, which had gone ahead or been leased locally, assemble out front. The animals are unloaded first, their cages placed on wheeled platforms. We shuffle toward the exit, the space becoming cramped, and the midday air warm as we await our cue. At last, the door to the carriage is flung open, and cool, fresh air wafts in. The station is nearly as packed as the rail car had been. Dozens of spectators pressed close, waiting to welcome the circus to town. Flash bulbs pop from cameras in rapid succession. After the quiet of the train, the chaos is jarring, like someone turning on the lights too quickly in the nighttime. I stop mid-step, causing the girl behind me to bump into my back. I am filled with doubt, unable to move. Usually, I love the open road, but suddenly I long for Darmstadt, where I know every inch of the land, and where I have a place to hide. Going on the road last year, as if it were not wartime, was hard enough. Now, I have the added burden of making sure that Noah can perform, that she and Theo are kept safe. How can I possibly carry on? "Astrid?" Noah says in her timid voice. I turn to her. She watches me nervously, uncertain what to do. I push past my doubts and take her hand. "Come," I say, and together we step from the train. Scanning the crowd, I see a look in the eyes of the people. Not of scorn, but of admiration and hope brought by our arrival. Adults watch us with the wonder of children. The circus had always brought light to the places it visited. Now it is a lifeline. I lift my chin. If we can still give them this, then the circus is not dead. There have been circuses from the times of the Romans and Greeks, our traditions centuries old. We had survived the Middle Ages, the Napoleonic Wars, the Great War. We would survive this too.
Chapter 8. Astrid. We make our way across the station platform. The horses, which have been hitched to the beast wagons, stomp their feet impatiently, snorting steam from flared nostrils. In the cages they pull, the lions and lone tiger are on full display. There are camels, too, and a small brown bear, standing alongside the procession on a leash. Last year we had a zebra, but it died over the winter, and Herr Neuhoff had not been able to replace it. Slowly the parade begins to move, snaking forward toward the village. A spray of faded slate rooftops cast into a hillside with a medieval cathedral at the top, watching over it all. Not so very different from the dozens of villages I've seen on the road over the years. Once the circus had moved more swiftly, a town a day, setting up and performing two or three times before taking down the chapiteau and moving on at night. But the train lines have slowed us now, and the Germans restrict where we can go. So the bookings are chosen more strategically, places where we can camp for a week and draw spectators from the surrounding villages, like spokes on a wheel. Or can we? Noah's earlier doubts echo in my mind. It has been more than 4 years of suffering and hardship here. It seems if the war drags on much longer, the people will simply stop coming. The incline grows steeper, and the procession slows as the horses strain against the weight of the wagons. Alongside the roadside, there is a small cemetery. A tangle of headstones sits embedded in the side of the hill. At last, we reach the edge of Tiers, a tangle of narrow streets lined by 3- and 4-story houses pressed close, seeming to lean on one another for support. At the top of the high street, the din of the awaiting crowd grows, and the air crackles with excitement. A trumpet blares as the parade begins, heralding our arrival. Our open carriage, adorned with streamers and drawn by horses in jeweled headdresses, is near the front, ahead of the lion's wagon with the trainer riding atop. The grandeur and bright colors of our procession glare against the withered facades of the buildings. The streets are unchanged from the villages in past years, but for the red flags with swastikas hanging from a few buildings, it would be possible to imagine we are not at war. We move painstakingly through town, wagons inching forward. Boys wave and catcall at us from the crowd. Beside me, Noah stiffens in response to the adulation, clutching Theo more tightly. I pat her arm reassuringly. To me, this is normal, but she must feel so naked and exposed. Smile, I say through my clenched teeth. It is a show from the very moment we step out. On a wrought iron second-story balcony, I notice a boy, or a man, perhaps, 19 or 20 at most. He does not join in the cheering and waving, but watches us with a mix of disinterest and amusement, arms folded. He is handsome, though, with wavy charcoal hair and a chiseled jaw. I imagine that his eyes, were I close enough to see their color, would be cobalt. Something on our wagon catches his gaze.